Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to a special edition of Issues Concerning Women, the radio talk show. I am your host, Francine Allen Humphrey, and as always, it is my pleasure and my delight to be with you. I am so excited today. We get the awesome opportunity today to sponsor the Urban League Yale of Hampton Roads. It is their Health Awareness Day 2021. The theme is the importance of Black wellness. The topics will be mental health and self-care with guest speakers LaToya Edwards and Lawrence Holloway. And on the second half of our show that's going to start in about 30 minutes from now will be diabetes with guest speaker Ishmael Meeks. Black Americans have been struggling with many health disparities during the coronavirus pandemic, leaving so many feeling hopeless. As people of color currently dealing with racism, police brutality, and even just going for a walk, the thought of Black wellness takes on an even more important role. We need to address these issues and so many more. So today we will start that conversation. So let's talk about it. This program is going to be for exactly 1 hour. And so if you have to take notes, get your paper and pencil ready because we're going to open up the mics and let's get the conversation started. So I want to welcome all of you today to the Health Awareness Day program with the Urban League Yale of Hampton Roads, and the committee chair for this particular event is Cynthia Hinton, her co-chair Jan House, co-chair Maxine Adams, and member Lisa Wise Chapman. So thank you all for being here. I am ready to rock and roll, and so I'm going to start with Mr. Lawrence Holloway today. I want to introduce him and bring him forward. Mr. Lawrence Holloway, Jr. is a committed and dedicated mental health professional who's had nearly 10 years of experience working with children, youth, and adults to improve their quality of life. He is a graduate of Old Dominion University, a native of Chesapeake, currently pursuing a Master's of Divinity degree. So, Mr. Lawrence Holloway, I welcome you to the program.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So I'm going to let you have the floor for 4 or 5 minutes to just tell us all about all of the wonderful things that you are doing with the mental health as a therapist, making sure that our young adults and our adults, young people and adults, are being serviced in the Hampton Roads community. So can you tell us all about your programs and what you're doing?
Sure. Currently, I actually do a couple of different things because I'm working towards the goal of a licensure. So primarily I work in the school district, Hampton City Schools, as a mental health specialist to work with students who are in need of certain interventions in the school system to ensure that they have access to equitable education. But outside of that role, I primarily work more in a crisis level. Throughout the pandemic, I spent most of the pandemic working as a crisis counselor. And so oftentimes I tend to encounter people who have come in contact either with law enforcement or come to the hospital searching for assistance because they're experiencing mental health crises. And so my responsibility in that role is just to basically intervene by providing a assessment and short-term crisis counseling services to identify what's the most appropriate solution or level of care for those individuals. And then I also work in a local psychiatric facility as a therapist as well. So I do a few different things, but primarily throughout the pandemic, my responsibility has kind of been to provide interventions for people who are experiencing crises as a result of the pandemic.
That is awesome. I know that it has been a year of uncertainty and an unknown, and also a year of awakening and opening our eyes and letting us see all the things that are happening in all of our communities. You know, we never know why things happen, but we also know that something has to change. So what have you seen in the past year that has really affected the African-American community, and not just African-Americans, but brown and other folks as well? And I know we are going through different situations with police brutality and racism and all of that, but are there any specific things that you've seen that have affected the African-American community?
Well, definitely, I would definitely say that police brutality and just systemic racism in general has been, we know that it's always been prevalent in our country, but it has seemed as though, particularly over the last 5 years and as most recently in the last year, throughout the presidential election, that it seems as though those tensions have increased. And so that has weighed heavily, particularly on people of color, because it has added another level of stress for those of us who identify as that population. In addition to that, just the stress of the pandemic, we know that people of color tend not, because of systemic racism, tend not to have the same opportunities as some of our other counterparts. And so I think from my perspective, it seems as though the pandemic had a different level of effect on our community, not just because of the fact that we were among the population that had a higher level of contact with the virus or death from the virus, but also just from the impact that quarantine and shutdowns have had on our lives. A lot of the people I have encountered have been people who have been experiencing mental health crisis because of the pandemic. Whether it's adults who are experiencing a higher level of anxiety and depression because of either losing their job, having to be thrown into being teachers for their children and virtual learning, and just all the different things that the pandemic has meant for their lives, but even for young people who are experiencing increased depression because of not being able to go to school, not being able to have that same level of social interaction that they were accustomed to for the majority of their lives. And so I think for us, for people of color in the pandemic, we've had, I think our experience has been like an intersection of just various levels of difficulty.
I agree totally. And even if it wasn't scary enough, just going through the everyday things during the pandemic and then with the racial injustice and the police brutality, dealing with all that, it just heightened our sense of, and I guess the only word I can think of is fear. And so many of us had to, like you said, change roles. Now we're teaching our children, and we're homeschooling, we're working at home, we're doing so many things that we never thought that we would have to do. But the great thing that I've seen is that we did rise to the occasion. The thing that bothers me, Mr. Holloway, and maybe you can address this, is the way that our children learn. I know you talked about our youth. Can you shed some light on what you've seen the impact has been on their education?
I think it's been a varied impact. When I say that, I mean that there have been some students who rise to the occasion, and then there has been others who really have struggled because of it. And I honestly think it has to really do so with their personality. There are some students who don't mind virtual learning because they can just kind of focus on their learning. They don't have to be distracted by social influences. They don't have to be distracted just by a number of different things that they encounter in a school. So being home and having to focus on their learning has kind of helped them to really to buckle down and to do what they need to do. But there's others who have struggled because of the fact that they are not around other people, and they all they get to do is stay at home in the house for the most part and focus on school. And so there have been students who, you know, may have not necessarily been the most successful academically, who have soared throughout this virtual learning experience. And then there's students who were A, B students who are now getting B's and E's because of the fact that they are not in a school setting. And then you have to add the fact that there are services that take place in a school setting that students may not have been able to get, especially those who receive special education services. Some of that support is not there because it does not necessarily translate into a virtual setting. And so that has also been it has been something that's made a negative impact on their education, and it's required parents to try to fill in the gap in a way that they may not be prepared to.
Thank you for that, your input. We know that from mental health to taking care of ourselves, a lot of times we don't do a good job with that. Is there any suggestions that you may have that as African Americans and black and brown community that we could do to help us transition through this pandemic? Because we're still in it. We're still losing lives every single day. So is there anything that mm-hmm. you could suggest that we could do?
I have suggested, because I think self-care and those types of things should be unique to the person. There are a number of different ideas that could work for people, but I do think self-care should be individualized because everything isn't most appropriate for everybody. And so I've encouraged people to really make time for themselves more than they normally would, because as you stated, we don't really take care of ourselves, and a lot of times we're not afforded the opportunity to, because we're having to juggle so much and having to work just a little bit harder than some others around us. But I think this pandemic is a prime example of why we need to reverse that mindset. And it's an opportunity to let go of some habits and some attitudes that may not necessarily be helpful for us. You know, one of the things that I've had conversations with about is the idea of that hardworking or workaholic type attitude that sometimes we can have. But the pandemic has showed us that attitude is not necessarily healthy for us, because you find yourself in a predicament where when you go from working multiple jobs, or, you know, the race of moving from one thing to the next, and then you're stuck at home, it can cause depression for some people. And so how do we fix that? Maybe it's not necessarily, you know, you need to just go for a walk. It's kind of interrogating the mindsets that kind of have led us to this place. And so I've encouraged people to just be intentional about taking more time. Even myself, I've definitely been more intentional about the way that I take care of myself. I, you know, kind of embraced going, you know, spending time in nature. I always encourage people, that's a free thing that you can do to take care of yourself, whether it's just going outside and sitting on the porch and getting some sunlight, taking a walk in the park, maybe going to a trail, those types of things. That's free that you can do to take care of yourself, and it's another way that you can take care of yourself. Whether it's, you know, if you have a family, being more intentional about the time that you spend with your family. I think COVID has required us to be more creative in the ways that we engage in our self-care practices. And I think that social connection has definitely caused us to explore some creative means of doing that, because that's necessary as well.
Absolutely. I think you're dead on with that, because we have to find safe places where we feel comfortable, you know, within our own communities, where we don't have to go spend any money, where we can actually have the ability to relax and enjoy just being here, you know, just getting up in the morning and just being able to breathe in and being able to go for that walk without having to be fearful. I think that's one of the other pieces that we have to think about, because even for myself, I just don't get up and just run out of the house anymore. I have a conversation with my family and let them know where I'm going and what I'm doing. Where before, I would never do that. So I think it's, we have to feel safe in our communities and feel comfortable, but we do need to do those things that are healthy for us, like you say, going for a walk, relaxing, without having to really explain it or having to have that fear that something may happen to us before we get back. So I think you were dead on. So at this point, I would like for you to give your information so that anybody that is listening to the broadcast today, if they would like to contact you, would you please give what resources you would want them to reach out to?
Sure. I'm most available. I think I'm most available via email. And so my email address is HOLLOLTY. That's a combination of my initials. So it's the first five letters of my last name, HOLLOLTY, my first initials and my middle name, at gmail.com. And that's the best way to contact me, because I can, if you email me, then I can remember to respond to you, and it's more easier for me to respond that way. I'm in the process of developing social media. That's not necessarily something I have done on a professional stance, so I'm in the process of developing that. So eventually I will be able to keep in contact through those mediums as well.
Absolutely. So we're going to open up the line for questions, and I'm going to start with our chair committee. Cynthia Hinton is here with us. Cynthia, do you have a question for Mr. Holloway?
My question is, excuse me. I'm sorry. My question is, due to today's pandemic and other stresses and news events of current times, people are feeling more fatigued than usual. I know I am. And along with that, they're also experiencing a lot of brain fog as well. What advice do you have, especially for those type of people that are just tired, just feeling tired all day, wanting to nap, just not feeling energetic to get anything done?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for me, I would probably want to know a little bit more about it, because there's more than one explanation for it. But I think the short answer to your question is really being. It takes a level of insight to kind of understand where that's coming from, because, for example, that kind of fatigue and, you know, that clouded mind feeling can be a result of anxiety. And I think one of the things about this particular time frame is that we're being stimulated in ways that cause us to feel anxious, and we're not necessarily aware that these things are causing us to feel anxious. Like, for example, if you're a person that's always watched the news in the morning or in the evening, just out of normal habit, you may not be aware that watching the news during a global pandemic, during societal unrest and all these other things that are in the news at this moment may be creating anxiety for you in a way that it hadn't in the past, because it's, you know, things have changed. And so my challenge would be to be mindful of these things, and maybe planning time to just kind of disconnect from things that are just feeding our brains, whether it's disconnecting from social media, from Facebook and all these different apps, maybe disconnecting from the news or watching TV, or what, you know, the things that we may not necessarily realize are feeding our brains and causing us to be anxious, and being intentional to take time to settle down. I think there's an app called Insight Timer. It's actually a free app. I think it is for Android and iPhones. But Insight Timer is a free app that offers guided meditations. It offers just relaxing music, just these different things that we can use for the purpose of allowing our brains to just rest. And I think that's the most important thing, is to take time for our brains to rest. And I think that will kind of help bring, if we are anxious, bring our anxiety levels down. And then I think as you see your anxiety level come down, you'll have more energy, and you'll also experience more function when it comes to that mental cloudiness. But at the same time, you know, those symptoms can be related to maybe depression from the pandemic. And so that's why I think it's important to kind of see what's causing it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was very good information. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to Maxine Adams.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Maxine. Do you have a question for Mr. Holloway?
Yes, I do. And I am enjoying the conversation today, and it's well-needed information. I really appreciate the opportunity. I find that during the pandemic, an important part is identifying and recognizing that something is wrong. And my question is, at what level do you try to self-care? And at what level do you recognize you need to seek outside help?
Thank you. I think that's a great question. What I've always explained to my friends and family is that there's an idea, and it has to do with the stigma around mental health. And so there's an idea that for a person to have a mental health need or diagnosis or issue, it means that we use the word that they're crazy. And the reason I challenge that is because you don't necessarily have to. I don't believe the word crazy to begin with, but I think I challenge the idea that there's a high level of dysfunction in your life before you reach the need where you need to see a professional. For me, I think anytime you find yourself experiencing something over a duration of time, and you can see that having an impact in your ability to function on a day-to-day basis, is a sign that you may want to talk to someone wherever feasible. And it's not that, you know, if you do that, that means you will have a diagnosis or that there is absolutely a permanent life condition that you would be dealing with. But it just means that it may be an opportunity to talk to a unbiased professional who is not, you know, doesn't know you, doesn't have any background history on your life to process what you say to them with, who can kind of reflect back to you what it is that you're saying and help you to kind of identify what it is that may be bothering you. For me, I actually had this moment I shared with my friends that, you know, I had been experiencing my own anxiety recently, and I couldn't figure out, as much as I know about anxiety, why I was experiencing it. And it wasn't until I sat down with my therapist and kind of explained what was going on that I actually came to the conclusion myself, but it wasn't until I sat down with my therapist and processed it that I realized where it was coming from. But once I realized where it was coming from, I was then able to address it, and I can move forward from it. But sometimes it takes talking to someone outside of your circle to be able to identify some areas where you can grow and move forward in your life. So I that's a long answer to say that sometimes it's when you feel like you need you need something more than yourself. If you realize your self-care activities aren't working as well as they used to, or that you still don't feel like they're making the difference that you want, maybe it is time to talk to someone and kind of get a second opinion.
Excellent, because that makes it objective and non-judgmental, which is very important to most of us.
Definitely. And it's a confidential state, so you can share things that you may not feel comfortable telling people that you're in relationship with.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Great question and great answer. We have 408-1529 on the line. I don't have you down on my list, but if you can identify yourself and if you have a question, we have your mic is open.
Hi, this is Sheila Williams, Francine.
Hey, Sheila. And, how are you today?
Hi. I'm doing fine. I came in late, so I don't really have any questions per se, but I just wanted to say that the information that I am hearing is fantastic, much needed. We're definitely in this area where we don't know and we don't recognize that we are having mental breakdowns or issues due to all of these things, pandemic-wise, physical, mental. It's just a conglomerate of stuff that is causing us to not realize that we need help. And it's good to know that we can seek help and it's not a problem to be able to do so. In the past, we've always had this stigma that if you were seeking help because seeing a psychiatrist or whatever, that something's wrong with you, that you shouldn't be able to do that. And it's glad to hear that we are at this point in our lives now that we realize that we can seek mental health and that we're not crazy. And so
yeah.
I thank you for that because my daughter has these issues and she's taking anxiety medication, but she's got off the medication and trying to do it more so on a herbal way versus the chemical imbalances that she's having with the medication. So it's glad to know that it's here, that there's help. And I would definitely share your email address with my daughter.
Thank you, Sheila. Would you like to respond?
Yes, I appreciate that response because one of the things that it made me realize the benefit I think that this pandemic has had from my perspective, what I see is although more people are seeking help at this time and so it can be challenging to find a professional, it's also a lot easier to do so in the same token because a lot of mental health professionals are providing services virtually. And so it's a lot easier for the person who may not have wanted to go and seek professional help, but they didn't have the ability to because it means they would have to take off from work and find child care and, make adjustments in their current schedule to be able to go sit and talk to someone for a period of time. Whereas now, a virtual appointment, you can be anywhere that you feel comfortable, that's secure. For me, I've had sessions in my home. I've had sessions in my car in a parking lot at a store. Just different things, but it makes it more easier for me to be consistent with it. So I think while it has been challenging and, the increased need is there, it's also a lot easier for people who may not have the free time otherwise to seek that kind of help.
Thank you. That is awesome. And I really appreciate everyone's input today. And we're already down to almost half of the show is over, so I'm going to open up the mic for the ladies from the Urban League so that you may say anything that you want to say to Mr. Holloway about his presentation today. So your mics are open.
And this is Cynthia Henson. I just want to say that this has been awesome. I know we're running short of time, so I can get a little lengthy in my speech, so I'm going to cut it short and say this was an awesome presentation. And thank you, Mr. Holloway, for coming on the program, and we really all appreciate you. Thank you again.
Yes, Maxine.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I have a quick ditto on that comment because we need this so much. So many of my family, my friends, myself, we have this unknown. This is an unknown for all of us, and we are all trying to cope, and to hear your expertise just reiterate so many things and with assurance. And I thank you, young man, because I hear so much emotion and so much caring in your voice, reaching out to all ages. And that matters. That makes a difference. We all are in this thing together. Thank you so very, very much. I am so happy that we are doing this today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sheila?
I really appreciate your words.
Yeah. Sheila, did you have anything you wanted to say?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay. Great. So this is about how we are dealing with the pandemic, and it's all about our community and what makes us all different, but also what makes us so similar. And this culture is a culture that has to have trust. So, Mr. Holloway, we thank you so very much for your input today. Thank you for being with us, and we welcome you to hang on with us for the next 30 minutes because we have another dynamic speaker if your schedule permits. But if not, we truly understand. And so, again, on behalf of the Urban League Guild and the Issues Concerning Women radio show, we thank you so very much for participating in Health Awareness Day 2021.
Thank you again for the opportunity. I really enjoy myself.
Great. All right. So we're going to take a break for about a second. So don't go anywhere. Everybody hang on, because next I have Mr. Ismail Meeks. So hold on for 1 second. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Issues Concerning Women, the radio talk show. Today we have the awesome pleasure to sponsor the Urban League Guild of Hampton Roads for Health Awareness Day. Our next guest speaker is Mr. Ismail Meeks. Ismail serves as the director of Fight Forever, a community outreach mobile eye care program that delivers comprehensive eye care to those in need. He is a counselor. He started Meeks Consulting. He is a SWAM certified business that provides public awareness that's so important to our citizens and for the community at large. He has also served as a senior advisor and campaign manager for District Director of U.S. Congressman Scott Ridgewell of Virginia. He has 6 years of federal legislators experience and so much more. And so I know we only have 30 minutes, so I'm not going to read his whole bio, but he does some wonderful things with the community. Ismail has a small business. He also works with Parkway Elementary School, and he frequently goes out to the public schools to talk to the children about what it is to be empowered, and he's a great community leader. So, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Ismail Meeks. Hi, Ismail. How are you?
Hello, Pastor Humphrey. How are you doing? Thank you so much
for
having me.
I'm doing fantastic. Absolutely. So I'm going to give you the floor so you can tell our listening audience all about what you're doing with your programs and anything else that you want to share. And the floor is yours for about 5 to 10 minutes. So take it away.
Thank you, Pastor Humphrey. Thank you to the Urban League Guild for putting this together. And thank you, Mr. Lawrence, for that helpful information that you shared. As mentioned in the brief intro, my name is Ismail Meeks, and I'm the director of Sight Forever. I think it might be helpful to talk a little bit of how I got into this position. The majority of my career has been focused on public service. I've worked on Capitol Hill for many years. I've worked as a campaign manager and worked on several campaigns from the federal level to the local level. And now I'm working with an ophthalmologist. So that's kind of odd to switch from public service to healthcare. My father had diabetes. My father lost his vision before he passed at the early age of 63 due to diabetic retinopathy. And so when I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Wagner and learn about what he was doing in our community to provide free diabetic health screenings, free diabetic eye screenings, it's something that was right up my lane because of how diabetes has personally affected myself and my family. Diabetes disproportionately affects the African-American community. African-Americans have the highest rate of diabetes in Virginia. Compared to white adults, the risk of having diabetes diagnosed is 77% higher among African-Americans, and diabetes is the number one cause of blindness for working people. 1 in 4 African-Americans with diabetes have diabetic retinopathy. and only 60% of individuals with diabetes go to get their annual eye exam. I know that's a lot of bad news, but the good news is that 80% of blindness can be prevented or cured. And I'd be happy to talk more about what we do to help prevent diabetes and diabetic retinopathy by providing free diabetic health screenings in the community.
Thank you, Ishmael. That was a great intro into my question. When we're thinking about epidemics, why is diabetes so prevalent in that area for African American communities, if you could speak to that? And is it primarily type 2 diabetes or just diabetes in general?
Type 2 diabetes. I think it has a lot to do with genetics. I think it has a lot to do with the food that we consume and the amount of food that we consume. I think it has a lot to do with education, resources. When you think about impoverished communities and the food that's available, I mean, for instance, I grew up in SeaTac, Seabridge Court, and the closest grocery store was a corner store, and there's no fresh produce there. There's popsicles, juices that are high in corn syrup and fructose, snacks, candies, chips, and none of that is true quality nutrition. So I think those are the key issues is access, which is really important for our community, and also education. A lot of folks that I interact with don't know the difference between and I did it before this job, an optometrist and an ophthalmologist. So optometrists can check your vision. They are not a medical doctor, but an ophthalmologist is, and they're a medical professional and doctor that can diagnose eye disease. So I think those are a few components that attribute to some of the things that we have, but I think the big part of it is our genetics and what we consume.
Thank you. I know that one of the things that you do is you do give the free eye exams. Is there anything else that your organization provides for the community or anything else you would like to share about how they can get in touch with you and what we need to do as citizens and leaders in the community to get those people to you?
Yes, yes. We treat all eye disease from AMD, macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts. We do it all. The reason that I focus on diabetic retinopathy is because there's a high prevalence of diabetes in Hampton Roads. But we treat everything. And the best way to get in contact with us is sightforever.com. And my email address is esmel@wagnerretina.com, ESMEL at Wagner, WAGNER, Retina, RETINA.com.
Great. Thank you. And we talked about that it is type 2 diabetes. So can you explain to someone in layman's term what's the difference in just regular diabetes or type 2 diabetes? Sure. Is there a correlation or is there a big difference?
Sure. Type 1 diabetes happens when you're a child or at birth. Type 2 diabetes is developed over time. And the body does not produce enough insulin, and it has to do with, consuming too much sugar and having elevated blood sugar levels. So type 1 when you're a child, type 2 develops over time, mostly when you're an adult.
Great. I hear a lot of people, and especially in my family, when I was younger, I didn't know anyone in my family that had diabetes. Now that we're a little older, some of my family members are saying they're borderline diabetic. Can you speak to that? Because sometimes that's a little confusion. You know what I mean? So either are you or are you not? Or are we in denial?
That is a great question. That is a great question. You can't be a little bit diabetic. I would say diabetes is, I guess, like pregnancy. You can't be a little bit pregnant. You either are or you're not. And once you're diabetic, there's no cure for diabetes. You have diabetes, it's treatable, but there is no cure. I think that's a good pivot to diabetic retinopathy. It's so important to get your annual screening. If you don't have diabetes, I would say 2 to 3 years, get your eyes checked. But if you do have diabetes, it's very important to get your eye screened once a year. Because if an ophthalmologist can catch and detect diabetic retinopathy early on, it can be treatable, and there's a good chance that you won't go blind. But if you ignore it, which some people like to do, I wouldn't say they like to do it. I don't like bad news. We don't like to get bad news. So sometimes we like to hold off going to the doctor just because we don't want to hear anything bad, and we think it's too far gone. Sometimes it is the case. If you start experiencing issues, then sometimes it's a little bit too late. That's why it's so important to get your eyes screened regularly.
Thank you, Ishmael. That is great because, you know, again, we hear, you know, we live with so many myths and we're so uneducated about so many things. And when somebody tells me they're borderline, I'm just looking at them like, I don't know what that pretty means.
Right.
I want them to definitely go and get checked. And if the doctor had some, it was brought up because the doctor had some concern about it. And I think a lot of times, like I said, we're in denial because we think it'll go away if we don't say that we have it. And I know that's not true. So I wanted you to address that. So I'm going to thank you so much. So you gave your information about how we can get in touch with you. And so thank you for that. So I'm going to ask Cynthia Hinton if she has a question for you. She's our chair for this health committee today. So, Cynthia, do you have a question for Mr. Meeks?
Yes, Mr. Meeks. I am asking a question. Miss Francine has asked most of my questions that I had in mind.
Sorry.
This is about the pre-diabetes and all of those things and the myths. I had all those. But anyway, one question that I have is in regard to,
yes,
you hear the terms now, A1C. And then you have heard through the years, my insulin level is up. Or you never heard anyone saying about the A1C. But recently I've been hearing a lot about A1C. What is A1C?
So A1C reflects your average blood sugar level in the past 2 to 3 months. So people with diabetes, they check their blood sugar regularly. So my father, I remember, he would prick his finger, you know, at least 2 to 3 times a week to check his blood sugar. And he would say, oh, my blood sugar's up. I need to take more insulin. So this is a test that doctors provide to check to see where you've been over time. Because, you know, one day your blood sugar could be low, one day your blood sugar could be high. So this provides an average.
So I did hear you also say that once you develop diabetes, you have diabetes. It cannot be per se cured, but just managed. Is there ever a time where you are diagnosed being diabetic, where you lose weight or you do some of the right things that you no longer have to be treated, that it actually goes away, or is it something that you have to live with the rest of your life?
I think it's more of the latter, and let me preface it with this. I am not a medical professional. I'm not a doctor. But from my understanding, yes, ma'am, it is not curable. So I think to what you mentioned, it's treatable, and you can get it to a point where you're not required to do the things that other folks are required to do, like get your weight down, get your blood sugar down, have a good diet, you stay active, you're getting your eyes screened, you're getting your eyes treated. Things are normal, that's the place that you want to be. Once you have diabetes, and you have to, you know, work with it for the rest of your life. But it doesn't mean that, you know, life is over, and you can treat it and you can live a healthy and a long life, but it's important that you do those things that I mentioned, staying active, you know, watch your blood sugar, watch the foods that you eat, et cetera.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Great questions and answers. Maxine, I'm going to open up your mic. Do you have a question?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Meeks. I am just so excited that we have the you sound young, and it's so important for us to know that there is a message that we all need in our community. And what I would like to know, what are your recommendations for things that we can do to encourage our family and friends and young people to start being aware of their weight, their diet, of different factors? How do we get that message? Because I'm incorporating several things into it, because often we think that just the fact that we eat too much sugar and our body is not able to break it down, and we're in denial about the comforting level of or amount of sugar that we give to the children, and even as teens and young adults, we incorporate a lot of sugar in our diet, of what breaks down to sugar, what is sugar. How do we get that? I mean, what can we do to help deliver that message?
Thank you so much for the question. I think y'all are doing that right now. You're doing a great job at it. And I think it's having these conversations internally in our homes, with our friends, at our churches, civic leagues, et cetera. You know, time is the most important resource that we have. And ultimately, God is in control of how long we spend our time on this earth. However, it's also our responsibility to make sure we take care of this vessel that he's given us.
Exactly.
So we need to be educated on what foods we need to eat and how we need to take care of ourselves. A lot of this information that I'm sharing, I didn't know about until my father was diagnosed with diabetes, and then even more, I didn't know about it until, you know, I took on this position as the director of this organization. So I think just having regular conversations and taking away the fear of taking care of ourselves, because we want to stay here longer. But nutrition is so important, and I would hope that we can have a further conversation about the foods that we eat, because I didn't know what nutrition was until after college. So I was playing sports.
Oh, okay.
I was eating chips and drinking Gatorade full of sugar, which is terrible, which is not sustainable, you know, as I get older. Anyways, I don't want to get off on a tangent. I think opportunities like this, bringing specialists in like Mr. Lawrence to talk about the importance of mental health, I think y'all are doing a great job at it. We just need to continue to do this.
Okay. I do have one other thing. I have heard people say that sugar is actually toxic to the body. Do we need sugar?
Yes. I think so, yes. There's healthy amounts of sugar, you know, that you need, dependent upon the amount of activity that an individual exerts. I think sugar is necessary. You do not need to get that fuel from sugar, but I think minimal amounts of sugar is okay. Toxic to the body, yes, I think a lot of the things that we consume on a daily basis are toxic to the body, but sugar in minimal amounts I think is okay.
Okay, and this is my last thing about, you mentioned fructose and corn syrup, but I've heard people say that whenever you see the TOSE, to leave it alone because the body doesn't break it down. Is that true?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. I can figure out the answer, and I'll circle back with you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all this
yes,
information.
Ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. And having you on the show.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Great questions. And while we're speaking about food, when we're thinking about how we prepare our foods, Mr. Meeks, is there something that we can do different? Because I know, you know, I'm a Southern cook, and I like all the stuff, but I, you know, all the spices and just throw it all in there. But I know as I age, everything doesn't agree with me. Do you think that's something that we should also be thinking about, the way that we prepare our foods?
Yes, yes. So I like to go fishing, and I think the best way to prepare fish is to fry it, and it's probably the worst way for us to consume food is to fry our food in fat. That's not good for us. It'd be better to maybe broil it or pan sear it with olive oil. So, yes, the way that we prepare our food, but more importantly, the foods that we eat are very important. So one thing that was shared to me was, when you go shopping at the grocery store, you should spend more time on the exterior, so the perimeter of the grocery store, so where the produce is, where the meats are. You should stay away from the center of the grocery store. That's where the processed foods are, the chips, the flour. If it's not natural, you shouldn't be eating a lot of it. You should focus more so on the exterior of the grocery store.
And, you know, we've all heard that, but we don't really listen to that because I like what's in the middle.
Me too. I do too. I just finished my first week of doing raw vegan. The first day was terrible. You know, I felt like I wasn't getting enough nutrition. I felt like I was tired. You just have to give your body time to adapt to something new. By the second day, I felt fine. I felt clear. I felt my body was more efficient. And it just takes time to kind of make those small changes. You know, I don't drink any soda, but when I was younger, I had a lot of soda. So now if I mm-hmm. taste soda, it's so sweet because my body's not used to it. So you can kind of just slowly wean your body off of those things that aren't good for you. And sometimes you can treat yourself, but try to eat the more natural foods as much as possible.
You're absolutely right about the soda, not drinking it. And if you have one, you're like, oh, you know, it's so sweet because and I'm not a doctor either, but when you're eliminating certain things, it heightens other senses in our bodies, you know, so your taste buds can taste that sweetness. And then your food tastes better, too, when you're not putting a whole lot of other things in it that's process, if you're just eating a natural thing. So I think that's something that we must continue to talk about and educate our children about. And education is so key, Mr. Meeks, just as you said, and we need to continue to do that. So I'm going to ask Sheila if she has a question for Mr. Meeks.
Hi, Agnes. It's awesome hearing all of the information that you have been providing. I have been listening again to the comments and the questions, and so the questions that I would have asked have already been asked. But I just want to thank you and let you know that I appreciate what you are doing for us today and providing us with the wealth of knowledge that we all need to help us with our health issues as well as with the issues of our family members, that we are able to provide this information to them as well. So, again, I just want to say thank you for agreeing to be on the call and to provide us with this wealth of information.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Great. We got about 6 more minutes. And so are there any other questions for Mr. Meeks? Let me let Mr. Lawrence in and see if he has the question because he's still hanging out with us. Mr. Holloway, did you have a question or comment?
I did not. I really appreciated the information that was shared. That was very enlightening.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Mr. Lawrence.
Yeah, so Ishmael, so I know we talked about a lot of things. We talked about eye care and health care and food. Is there anything else that we might be missing that you want to bring to the forefront today for our community?
Sure. So detecting eye disease early on is the best way to prevent blindness. And so what we do with Sight Forever is we're a mobile eye clinic. So just about every other weekend, we're at a community event or we're at a church, and we're providing free diabetic eye screening. So what that includes is we check the pressure of the eye, we check your vision, and then we sit you in front of the, it's called a fundus camera, and we take a picture of the back of the eye, which is the retina. So light enters through the front of the eye. It passes to the back, to the retina, which is the soft tissue in the back where all the blood vessels are. And then it takes that light, it communicates it through the optic nerve to the brain, and that's how we see. What happens with diabetic retinopathy, those blood vessels, they become damaged. And then your eye is no longer to communicate to the brain what it's seeing, therefore causing blindness. And so we sit people in front of that camera, we take a picture, and our doctors are able to see whether or not they have issues. It takes about 8 to 10 minutes for us to do the full exam. So for me, because diabetes and diabetic retinopathy disproportionately affects our community, the African-American community, I want to screen as many people as I can so we can save eyes and we can save lives, is what I like to say. So if there's any opportunities for community events, churches, et cetera, again, this is a free service that we provide. We would be happy to do that.
That is awesome and so amazing. And, you know, diabetes education is so vital. Early intervention is also vital as well, because the earlier we get our exams and take care of ourselves, we can prevent some of the things like blindness from happening. And we thank you so much. And I have one more question, and then we're going to wrap it up. The effect diabetes has on children, because you said type 1 affects children. Do you see that as a problem also in the African-American community, or is it, is it others? So
does type 1 diabetes affect the African-American community more than others, or is it just type 2 diabetes?
I'm thinking, because you said type 1 is for children, yeah. So type 1 diabetes affects you when you're younger. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I have misinformation. But type 1 affects us when we're younger, and type 2
correct.
Is for when we're older and affects the African-American
correct.
Community. What have you seen in our children? When do they need to get, you know, like their eye exams and that sort of thing? Because
okay,
you said it's genetic. Yes, yes. So that's kind of where I'm going.
Yes.
If it's genetic, if you know, with your father and you, you know, what would you should suggest if you're, you know, your son or daughter, you know, if you have children, when would you get them checked?
Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. So type 1 diabetes is more prevalent in with white people. However, if your child has diabetes, type 1 diabetes, it's important that they get their eyes screened at least once a year. If you have high blood pressure or diabetes in your family, while it's not required, I think it would be helpful to get your eyes screened annually. If there is no diabetes in your family, it's important to get your eye screened at least every 2 to 3 years. So every year, if you have diabetes or if it's in your family, every 2 to 3 years if you do not have diabetes.
Thank you. That was my question. And I wanted, of course, for us to educate as much as we can. And so, Mr. Ishmael Meeks, I thank you so very much for hanging out with us today for Healthy Awareness Day. And so, Cynthia, Maxine, Sheila, if you have any last words, since we got about 1 minute and we want to end on time, so take it away, Cynthia.
This is Cynthia. Thank you, Mr. Meeks, for providing us such great advice on diabetes, which, unlike COVID, has been impacting our community for a long time. Although you stated that you're not a medical doctor, the information we were discussing on diabetes will help all of us as we focus on ways to manage and prevent diabetes. This has been an enlightening discussion, and I'm glad that you came. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Maxine, like 30 seconds.
Thank you so much, and it has been very enlightening. And I just hope the community was able to tune in and enjoy the presentation. Thank you.
Ms. Sheila?
Likewise, I just want to say again, thank you so much for the wealth of knowledge that you have provided us today. And again, we appreciate all that you have done and for you taking the time to be with us today.
Okay. Well, we thank you again.
Yes,
we
thank you.
Our guests. Yes. We thank Mr. Ishmael Meeks and Mr. Lawrence Holloway. And I'm going to just put it out there. I am so proud of our brothers here today. They stepped up to the platform and to the plate and just enlightened us. So thank you so much. We applaud you. So many times we talk about issues concerning women. But we were just delighted that both of these young men could join us today. So we thank you so very much. And so with that being said, we have come to the end of another great broadcast. We will not end it here. We will have more discussions, and I invite you both back to the table. So thank you so much, Mr. Meeks and Mr. Holloway.
Thank you. Enjoy your weekend, everyone.
Good night. Good afternoon.
Yes, absolutely. So, and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. We want to celebrate you. Yes, indeed.
Happy Mother's Day to you.
Right. Yes.
Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day.
Yes, so we're going to end it right here. Thank you all so much. This has been Issues Concerning Women, the radio talk show with our special guest today, the Urban League Guild of Hampton Roads, who sponsored the program Health Awareness Day with Mr. Ishmael Meeks and Mr. Lawrence Holloway. Thank you again. Have a blessed evening, and I will see you soon. Take care now. God bless, and bye-bye.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.